Here we go. Let's go. Let's have my mind blown.
So you had a really good question last week, which was how many GMs have lost 100 games that were any good, right?
Or how many? I think it was more like how many GMs have lost back to back, or have had back to back 100 loss seasons and stayed on. I think most of those who have lost back to back 100, you know, had back to back 100 loss seasons, have been really bad. But right. Some of them, and I think Jack might be one of them, isn't really bad. Certainly, a lot of things haven't gone well for him, but
right.
The results are what results are.
So I'm going to blow your mind. I found one really, really interesting example of a GM who had lost 100 games in back-to-back seasons.
Okay.
And it was good. Pat Gillick. Pat MF Gillick, who is one of the few general managers who knows who I am and does not like me at all. 1978, the Blue Jays, he lost 102, and then the next year he lost 109.
Okay.
Yes.
So that is basically an expansion team.
Right. But Pat Gillick stayed on with the Blue Jays and did some success.
That's right.
Right. And he's Pat Gillick. He's in the Hall of Fame. I don't know how you argue with that.
I know. Newly inducted Hall of Fame general manager, Pat
Gillick. Yeah. And I'm also going to make the case, though, when we talk about the 100 lost seasons, that Pat Gillick should really have the 2004 Mariners who lost 99 games laid at his feet, because that he was the architect of that team.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So that's one. And then I'm going to go, I got another one. Your head is going to explode in an even more dramatic fashion this time.
I'm going to try to hold it together here.
With your Rainier's hat.
Yes.
Which I totally approve of. Wait, it says FR on it.
No, that's just the magic of fonts and whatnot. That is a normal sans serif T and kind of a cursive R. This is old.
All right. So, Pat Gillick is in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Branch Rickey.
Branch Rickey.
Branch Rickey.
Okay.
In 1955 with the Pirates. With the Pirates. No one remembers Branch Rickey and the Pirates. So, and here's what's crazy about this. All right, so I looked this up. In 52, he lost 112 games.
Ouch.
In
154 game season.
Right. They played 155 that year. And then in 53, he lost 105. In 54, he lost 101. Branch Rickey lost over 100 games 3 years in a row, and they weren't playing 162 game seasons. Branch Rickey's in the Hall of Fame.
That's right.
Yep.
Deservedly so.
Yeah, so there you go. That's my...
Has John Schuerholz ever done that? I was just wondering about that.
I looked it up and no. It's interesting. Like getting to 100 losses seems to be really, really hard.
Yeah, I agree.
So we were talking, we mentioned whether or not Kevin Towers had done it.
Yeah, or something similar to it.
Right, so he came so, so close. So Towers lost 96 in 2002, 98 in 2003, and then 99 in 2008.
Wow.
But Towers never lost 100 games.
Uh-huh, okay.
Yeah.
That's impressive. Yeah, I was just...
Also, Billy Bean. Billy Bean has never lost 100 games.
Okay.
I wouldn't have thought that, right? The A's have gone through crazy recycling. Recycling. I'll edit that out. The one I thought was really, really cool, though. The guy I think is the best active general manager, and we can talk about this for a while. You know, this is a great topic.
Hey, it's your cat.
Hello, Ethelred.
So, Dave Dombrowski did it twice. He lost 108 games with the Marlins in 98, and the 2003 Tigers lost 119 games. And he, I'm going to argue he's the best general manager working today.
And why is that? Who do you think the best GMs working are? I think these days everyone's talking about Alex Anthopoulos in Toronto. Up until last year, obviously, Zirencic got a lot of votes there. Towers is probably picking up a lot more votes. Why Dombrowski?
I think a lot of GMs, you look at them in the same way you look at managers, right? You bring in a certain manager and they're good at getting something out of a veteran team. There are other managers who are pretty good at developing younger players. Dombrowski is the only general manager I can think of who has demonstrated the ability to build teams from nothing, right? Mm-hmm. Like he took the Marlins and they were just ridiculously bad and built them into a world champion, tore them down entirely, rebuilt them again in just horrific circumstances. And then you can see it with the Tigers. Like when he took over the Tigers and he was the president, he didn't take over, I think, as general manager until he got tired of seeing someone else more inept as a general manager. but he took the Tigers and built the Tigers into respectability. He has the ability to sign good free agents and run an organization that drafts well and develops players. I don't know of any other general manager that has the complete mm-hmm. skill set that Dombrowski has demonstrated repeatedly.
That's interesting. That's a good point. It's probably just where I'm looking at it. I'm just looking at the Tigers farm system going, what exactly do they have there? They have a couple of interesting pieces, but the guys that they've drafted and developed, you know, obviously they've kind of been hit and miss, even though they've gone over slot and picked up some guys who have fallen in the draft due to signability, Andrew Miller being one.
Yeah.
Porcello being the other. I mean, you know, Porcello's not not a terrible player by any stretch, but you know, the results speak for themselves. Again, I mean, you don't need to have the kind of farm system that the Royals or the Rays have to be an effective team or to be an effective GM. So that's interesting.
Yeah, when I was looking up 100 lost seasons, the Royals have had a couple.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering if, you know, if Schuerholz had a couple of 100 lost seasons in there. But it's really, I mean, they really just fell on their face when he left.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, they won the World Series in 85. Yeah, God, they were 92-70 in 1989, which I think was his last year. It's amazing.
Yeah. So I guess that's my case for Dombrowski, and I don't know. I have to say, you know, the isolation pod and everything. I have no idea how good their farm system is. You can talk to that in a lot more authority than I can.
It's not. Yeah, it's not an elite farm system. But who knows? Maybe you don't need that when you can trade the way that they've done, when they've been able to pick up Miguel Cabrera and people like that, and you know, that's maybe all you need.
Right, and I think that I want to call that out too. Dombrowski has built his team. Like you look at the Marlins, right? They developed some of those guys. They went out for free agency, and he designed a team that became the template for how you edge your way into the playoffs and succeed. Like you get a couple frontline starters and some big bats, but he built those guys through free agency and trades and development, right? Mm-hmm. And he, despite being a really good trade guy, he never developed a reputation for ripping people off, or not that I'm aware of. I'm sure someone mm-hmm. will immediately correct me and say that there was bad feelings about some trade whenever. But, like, I don't know, the example I thought of when another 100 lost GM, Jim Bowden, right? Bowden had a reputation as a wheeler dealer, and a lot of people thought that he operated sometimes in bad faith.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and Dombrowski, for his long record, I don't remember any incidents like that. I'm trying to remember who the guy that Bowden, I think there was a pitcher that Bowden signed in Cincinnati for the hometown discount, and then traded him after supposedly having a handshake agreement that he was not going to trade him. The name escapes me, but yeah, you know, that's it's hard to run a major league team for that long and not start stepping on people. I think that's another testament. Like, Dombrowski's still got a really good reputation in the game. I think. I don't know.
Right.
You know, I'm in a pod.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing that Schierholz has been able to do that as well, because I think people have thought that maybe they haven't been as forthcoming with a lot of the information about some of their prospects. They've had a lot of guys that were pretty highly touted that go elsewhere and kind of immediately fall in their face. The, you know, Dan Meyer for Tim Hudson deal comes to mind. There have been quite a few of those. But, you know, maybe maybe it's just the old boys network, or maybe it's that, you know, it hasn't always gone that way. But I think Schierholz still has a very good reputation in the game.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, too, when we talk about the Braves in that way. The team I always think that does that is the Yankees, right? One of the things the Yankees are really good at is they use this vast advantage they have in, I want to say, like, gravity, right? Like, there are so many people who cover the Yankees all the time that it's really, really easy for them to get any of their prospects hyped up as the next huge thing, and they build this great momentum. And any trade rumor they want to start, it just starts rolling and gaining momentum. And when you look at it historically, there have been a lot of trades where they let go of some guy that, if you just read the press accounts and not so much the scouting reports and everything, you would think that they were the next coming of Babe Ruth, and the Yankees were only parting with that guy because they were making this year's playoff push, and then they turned out to be nothing.
Mm.
Right. You know, and I think within baseball, people don't regard it as, that's not as bad as foisting someone off with an injury, but I think that the Yankees do as good a job of anybody of hyping the potential of their prospects to increase their value.
They've also got plausible deniability. They don't have to do it themselves. I mean, they've done that to a degree with some of the recent guys. Robinson Cano comes to mind, but damn it, I can't believe he's actually kind of lived up to what they said he was going to be.
a long time ago when I was playing fantasy baseball, I was like, yeah, Cano, I like that guy.
Really?
Yeah, I know. It's funny because I like Jack Wilson. Yeah, I know.
It came hot on the heels.
Blind squirrels, nuts, yeah.
Of them trying to, and again, it's not even them. It's just, as you say, they've got so many people interested. They've got so many bloggers. They've got, you know, so many beat writers. But a lot of people talking about Deonor Navarro as a big chip. And there was actually a post on USS Mariner several years ago about that where Dave was like, you know, don't believe the hype. And that was well-founded, Deonor Navarro, not very good. So it was just right around that time, and maybe a year or two later, that everyone started talking about Robbie Cano. And I just thought, I've seen this movie before.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, so it's not Cashman who's doing that, by and large. It's other people, which is perfect. He doesn't have to do that work.
Yeah, I don't know who in Yankeedom is responsible for managing rumor mongering and the giant amorphous blob of Yankee press that follows them around. Don't they have it's over 100? Well, I wonder if the newspaper crash has thinned the herd yet, but they used to have, I think it was 100, and it was over 115, I want to say 117, like press people with credentials in the Yankee Stadium box.
That's impressive. I do wonder if some of that would have thinned out, like some of the Japanese media moving on after Matsui left. Who knows? But I mean, you're right. I mean, there's just so many papers in an area that big. The New Jersey papers, you know, all around New York, not just New York City. So I can see it.
Yeah, this is, by the way, the reason I just despise the Yankees. Like, I don't actually despise the... Well, I kind of do. But I hate that the Yankees and the Mets are the only team in that market. It mm-hmm. it just drives me insane. Like, something's dramatically wrong. And you can respect them for spending money on the team and turning these advantages into world championships where, for instance, the Mets don't do nearly as well. But if you're one of two teams in the New York market, your baseline is the Mets. Mm-hmm. You can buy off your mistakes and have terrible GMs, and the field is so tilted towards those two teams.
Interesting. Just I know you've been in the isolation pod, but the Mets may have kind of had their at least financial got her damn wrong here. The Madoff scandal has really wiped out the Mets ownership.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, poor babies.
Which actually, perversely, probably only helps the Yankees more. And again, the Yankees were the first to really exploit that having your own TV contract deal. They've had every advantage, and then they've gone out and invented some new ones, which is...
I know, they're smart.
They are. They're really, really smart.
Yeah, but if anyone wants to sell me the Mets for like a dollar, that would be... That's fine. You know what? I'll take it off the poor bankers.
It was looking like that was a real possibility.
No one woke me?
I don't know where that is right now. We should look into that.
I would. No, C-League's never going to let me buy the Mets, though.
I know.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. I've gone off on that rant like 90 bajillion times. It's ridiculous.
Do you see any possibility of expansion at this point? I guess with the owners playing, crying poverty a lot, especially in this economy, it's probably off the table. But do you think there's any possibility of a third team in that market?
I don't know. I'd like to think so. I don't realistically believe that that's possible. I think because I think what happens right now is, I mean, we've seen it with the Giants and the A's, the baseball's territorial system, which is this horrible archaic relic, it destroys that possibility because you can't under the territorial rules, you can't bring an AL team into New York because the Yankees can say no, and you can't bring an NL team in because the Mets can say no, and both of them are going to say no, so you have to buy them off. We saw this with the Expos move and even the Orioles, right?
Buying off the Orioles, yeah.
Right. Like, this kind of thing is crazy. And it goes down to the level of where all the farm teams are located. And, you know, as Dave encounters frequently, you can't listen to certain games because there's a A-ball affiliate within 80 miles. And so it's blacked out on him. I think... Before anything else happens, C-League or whoever succeeds C-League, they have to just clean that up, right? They have to go through and say this makes absolutely no sense and it doesn't serve the fans at all.
It's of course, not, the right? C-League and his successor work for the owners,
right? And I think the argument they make, I think the way you get rid of the territorial system is. You use the lever of MLB. What's the AM stand for?
Advanced Media.
Advanced Media. So you use that lever and you say, like, look, there's 80 bajillion people who want to give us more money, and they can't because they can't watch the broadcasts they want out of territory. And you say, like, there's this many people who are, for some reason, Philadelphia Phillies fans. And they live in these territories, and they can't subscribe and watch the games. You would make this much more money if you would allow us to stream these games everywhere and not have to obey the territorial restrictions. You got to go rewrite all these agreements and whatever else. But you come to a new compact that sort of equalizes that, everybody makes more money, and then you can say, look, having a team in Jersey, we can go there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that doesn't, that allows us to draw more money from that market without hugely impacting the Yankees and Mets, and maybe you forge that agreement. I don't think, given the entrenched financial interests of all these teams, that we're going to get anywhere to the point where they can just move freely.
Right.
Though I think they should. Though as a fan, yeah, and you know, it's funny for me to say that just after Sonic's day, but God, what were they thinking?
The Sonics or the Mariners or
you know, the Mariners, like why
not celebrate anybody?
I understand having read the PR article that ran MLB.com about this. I understand that I feel like their heart was in the right place when they thought about this, and I think at the same time it's just horribly misguided. And I would love to hear from people about whether or not they thought Sonic's Night was good, but I was not a huge basketball fan, and I think this is just ridiculous. Like I watched the Sonics through the 90s, and I still felt like when the team left, I was just angered beyond belief. And it's a reminder of what the Mariners went through with their stadium, and that not so long ago, we had our current ownership group crying about the need for a stadium and how much money they had lost in their last years in the kingdom and all of that good stuff, you know, and it's 2011 and I don't believe we've started profit sharing yet with the Mariners. I believe they're still, actually you can tell me this, right? I've been in the pod. Have they finally fessed up that they've paid off all their debts from when they took over the team?
I don't know. I will look that up.
Okay. I know the, God, I'm feeling like I actually know this answer, but, if I remember when they took over and they signed the Safeco thing, they were going to share revenues with the public facilities district. And
right.
In order for that to happen, they had to pay off this mountain of debt that they had taken on when they bought the team and running the team in the lean years, and mm-hmm. the open question was whether or not the up and downs were all going to allow them to claim they were running the team at a loss. Because we've seen that already. Even in years where they drew really, really well and they didn't have an extremely high payroll, they were claiming, oh, we lost
right.
$5 million or $3 million or some small amount that barely allows us to stop paying off the paper debt.
Mm-hmm. They've certainly been claiming profits in some recent years.
Okay. Yeah, I would like to start sharing that money. But yeah, like you know, why remind the fans that that one team that went through an at times pretty ugly fight for the stadium. Why have that team honor another team that went through really two ugly fights over where they were going to play and ended up leaving for, I don't know, some hellhole. So it just seems, it seems weird. Like,
it seemed like a pretty good night. They drew, 27,000 fans. They had a lot of, you know, intense fans, not for the baseball game, which you could say, you know, what's the point of that? But, they had people doing the Sonics chants all night. That was one of their better, livelier crowds, Kings Court nights excluded, of the year. This for one of the most unwatchable baseball games I've seen in a while.
Oh,
I mean, this
God.
Was...
That was so bad.
Right. I mean, the Sabathia game last week, at least you can tip your cap. This is a truly elite pitcher. You had the, is he going to get a perfect game? It certainly looks like he is. This, I mean, there was no no-hitter. There was no nothing. It was just, this was just an unfair fight.
Yeah, it was brutal to watch. So I was at the Harmon, and I'm drinking this beer that I worked on initially.
And what's it called again?
Expedia Ale.
All right.
Ask for it by name.
I shall.
Yeah, so we brewed it, and then it went into a Pro-Am competition, and then it got picked by Harmon as something they're going to brew as a seasonal. So, but yeah, so I went down for the tapping, and I'm hanging out with a bunch of other people who helped brew the first batches, and then I asked them to put the game on, and because they had some like skateboarding thing going. And at the time, people were sort of watching the skateboarding thing. And like, wow, that's crazy. That guy almost did a 360 while doing a 180. And it was, and they were talking about like Tony Hawk and Sean White and other people who flip over while turning in midair. And they put the game on. I actively got embarrassed. Like, after two innings, I was pretending that I wasn't watching the game and that I was not the guy who had asked them to right. turn it over. I was just, oh, yeah, that was terrible.
Right, which led to what seems like something of a rash move in demoting Aaron Laffey today. I just don't get it. I just don't get it. Yes, it was a terrible game. He put it out of reach, but is this what we're going to do now? Where anytime a long reliever does poorly in long relief, they're out of here? I mean, it seemed very reactionary to me.
Yeah, I don't like that either. I wonder if at this point they're just sort of looking for things to do.
Yeah, definitely. That it had that feel where everybody in baseball is talking about Eric Bedard being on the block. Teams looking at Doug Fister, all these teams, you know, Colby Rasmus moving to Serrano, yeah. A lot of moves. And last night we had the Hunter Pence trade come down. That didn't happen, so we're going to bring up Dan Cortez. So far, ladies and gentlemen, Peter, fastball.
Every time we talk about Dan Cortez, I think about the MTV host.
I know.
I cannot do it. For many of you, that will not make any sense. Yeah. So you wanted to talk about whether or not this team is less watchable than the 2014.
Right. You know, I talked about it in one post, and I saw Jeff Sullivan make reference to it at Lookout Landing as well. There seems to be a big difference between the watchability of the 2010 team and the 2014. I think both teams had a bit of expectation. I mean, I think we all thought the 2014 was going to come down from the 90-win seasons that the Mariners had before that.
Right.
I don't know that people thought they were going to be a 99-loss team. But, you know, again, 2010, there were a lot of expectations. There was the Sports Illustrated cover and the whole thing. And then they just fell on their face. A lot of that last year was the run scoring. Obviously, they couldn't score. It was awful to watch. And they just didn't seem to have a whole lot of hope. They went out, they were, you know, quickly slaughtered, and that was that. But this year, it's kind of hard to argue that they're different in any meaningful way when they're on pace to score about the same amount of runs as they did last year. And at the same time, with guys like Ackley, Justin Smoke, at least for a month there, there's maybe a little bit more hope. There's, with some of the moves they made, particularly Willie Pena, we can have some fun with limited players who are moderately entertaining. That's the theory, and it hasn't worked. I mean, that's in, at least in part, what Jack Cust was supposed to do.
Yeah,
he clearly didn't, so he's gone. We went with entertainment over, you know, MLB readiness in bringing up Carlos Figueroa. That didn't go down so well. So you know, maybe we keep trying. I mean, everybody's looking for that next Bucky Jacobson because apparently, even in a 99 loss season, coming off the heels of the franchise's best performance ever, all it takes is one entertaining designated hitter, and people don't seem to mind. It's kind of an interesting dynamic.
Right. I think I'm going to argue that this team is maybe on any given night not much better to watch than the 2014. But the 2014, by mid-season, who were you looking forward to seeing a start, right? Like if Jamie Moyer was getting lit up.
Yeah.
Right. I'm looking at the roster now, right? The leaders in the game started was Moyer, Franklin, and then we had Pinheiro, some of Mesh, some of Garcia, some of Madrich, Ron Valone picked up 10 starts somehow. Right, that's just terrible.
That is pretty bad. I mean, there's no way around that.
I don't want to see that team at all. Whereas I think I absolutely want to tune in and see Felix start. I want to see Pineda start. There's reasons that I would tune in on any particular day. And I think when you look at who's hitting, who's playing the field, right? I'm still interested in what happens to Smoke. I'm really enjoying watching Ackley play.
Yeah,
there's reasons to tune in. Whereas, you know, in 2004, I looked down that lineup, and the only person I want to say is, like, you know, Ichiro had an Ichiro year.
Yeah, Ichiro was chasing the all-time hits record. That was something. Bobby Madrich was a great story who came up later, and then you had Leone and Bucky coming up, which in hindsight sounds laughable, and yeah, I think I it is.
But I remember I was totally psyched too.
We were psyched because, you know, Brett Boone or Rich Aurelio was so bad, and because we had to watch Scott Spezio before. So anybody replacing Scott Spezio was going to be moderately exciting.
Yeah, you know, I hoped I would never have to utter Scott Spezio's name again, and I went an entire hour last time without saying the word Scott Spezio, but God, that guy was terrible.
I know. Yeah. On and off the field, that just pretty much the worst. And, you know, not adjusted for the era, but, you know, he's handily out-hitting Sean Figgins, which is kind of depressing.
I know. Oh, God.
A lot better than Figgins.
I never thought about that. That's terrible. Why did you tell me that? Now every time I see Sean Vegas, I'm going to be like, man, I sure would like to see Scott Spezio.
No, see, we have to separate the pure numbers. We can't be too beholden to... I don't care how well Spezio hit in 2004, and he was worse in 2005. And I don't really care that much about how well Sean Figgins is hitting right now. I just do not want to see Scott Spezio again.
Yeah, ever. No.
It has nothing to do... They're both bad, so at some level, it's all down to intangibles. And Scott Spezio's intangibles are the worst.
What? Have you never listened to Sandfrog?
No, I actually haven't. Am I missing out?
Didn't he play some shows when he was down in Tacoma? You didn't go check that out?
No, I did not. Oh, I did not.
Mark. Sandfrog.
Well, tell me, if you got like a 7-inch or something like that, I could borrow.
He cut a split with what's that?
Peter Gammon's band.
Yes,
I should pick that up.
It's a double side. It's
that's the other thing. That's back when we had all sorts of musicians on the team from. Raul Ibanez, Hunter Brown down in the Tacoma Rainiers. I think he's got an album. Anyway.
Did Miguel Batista ever do some spoken word?
I think so. I think so. You can find it next to Jello Biafra's spoken word stuff.
Did you ever read his detective book?
I'm now thinking, what is the Mariner-related product that I would buy last? And I had thought that Sandfrog would be up there. Miguel Batista's detective fiction. I'm just not... No, I haven't read that. I'm not going to read that.
I don't remember if it was what kind of a mystery it was, but in the his writing style is all adverbs. It was all adjectives and adverbs. It was Bob the awesome lawyer quickly walked to the large-ish table quickly and stop.
He said, "Love, bring me some cold, refreshing water at once."
Yes. He, said circumlocutiously. Yeah.
English isn't his first language. You can maybe blame that on the translator, or maybe that was that. Who knows? I never read his poetry. I didn't read his detective fiction. Another one who I was, I think every Mariner fan was just pretty excited to see go.
Yeah, he didn't seem like a bad guy, but no, I was also not sad.
Right.
Hey, do you want to do the sponsor?
Yeah. What's the sponsor?
I'm glad you asked. Today we're brought to you by Ichiro. Ichiro would like to remind Ichiro. Fans. What?
Thanks, Ichiro.
Yeah. Ichiro would like to remind fans that, like you, he's provided. I totally just blew it. I just blew my head. I'm going to have to edit that.
Hey, who's the sponsor, Dad?
Today's sponsor is Ichiro. Ichiro would
thanks.
Like... See, we just blew it again. I'm terrible. Fuck.
Yeah, me too. Hey, Derek, who's the sponsor?
Now, should we just... we could just blow it over and over.
Yeah.
That's comedy. Mark.
Yes?
Today we're brought to you by Ichiro.
Oh, wow. Thanks, Ichiro.
You're welcome. Ichiro wants to remind fans that he's been around, like you, since 2001, and he's provided a decade of pure greatness, and he is the only player who is guaranteed to go into the Hall of Fame as a Seattle Mariner. Ichiro, ask for him by name.
Synonymous with quality.
Absolutely.
Durability.
Did you say variability?
No, durability.
Durability. That's true. So if this was not the script that Ichiro gave us, but if you look at great players in franchise history, even Griffey only played in like 70-something games in 1995.
Wow.
Right?
That's right.
That's arguably the most dramatic season in Mariner history. He took most of it off. Ichiro doesn't take days off.
Well, he took one day off, but that was probably, manager's decision. Yeah. Ichiro is remarkable, and I'm proud to be associated with him.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Ichiro, for sponsoring today's recording.
You know, I'm going to go out and watch Ichiro tonight.
You know what? I think I will, too. So I went out and looked this up because I was curious about this. Do you think Griffey gets in the Hall of Fame as like a first ballot?
Yes, absolutely.
Now, do you think, given Griffey's history, that he goes in as a Mariner?
Yes.
Now it's up to the Hall now, right? The players don't get any say in this. They took that away.
Yeah, I have to think that they have some sort of a vote, even if it's not a formal thing. I don't understand what the point would be of just totally ignoring a player's wishes, but I guess it's possible now. But, all of his best seasons were in Seattle. He had a lot more of them. He's now employed by Seattle. There's no way that he'd go in as a Red.
Yeah, I looked up, I was curious about this, and I went and looked up, how many wins above replacement, because I'm a geek. Griffey contributed as a Mariner, and it's over 70. It's crazy. The vast majority of his career value is those seasons in Seattle. Now, Ichiro,
is that drafts war or? I was looking at that too. It's interesting because it's all about how you handle the defense in the. On Baseball Reference, he leads the team with 67.5, basically tied with Edgar Martinez. Now, Edgar Martinez, obviously not a first ballot Hall of Famer. Never. I think there's always going to be the stigma about the designated hitter. But Griffey was an icon, so Griffey will absolutely go in on the first ballot.
Right, and Griffey's also cultivated a reputation as being a clean as the driven snow player in the steroid era, which
right.
will help immensely.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've already seen a lot of players that I thought would get more consideration have just
gone. It's ridiculous that Jeff Bagwell isn't in the Hall of Fame. It is absolutely absurd that Jeff Bagwell isn't in the Hall of Fame, and a lot of the reasons given for that are that his teammates, like Ken Caminiti, were on steroids.
I mean, yeah.
This is remarkable. Well, he was in close proximity to steroids, therefore, yeah. It's, I don't know. I just hope that 10 or 15, 20 years we'll get over this.
The Bagwell thing is, I'm stunned. I'm not the biggest Jeff Bagwell fan, but wow. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got the numbers. He played in the Astrodome for a number of years, which was a pitcher's park, before moving over to whatever they call it now, Minute Maid, Enron. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But.
Yeah. So what's the Baseball Reference leaderboard then? It's
Baseball Reference leaderboard has Griffey at 67.5, Edgar at 67.2, and then our daily sponsor Ichiro Suzuki at 54.3. Then it drops off pretty severely because you've only got the few years of A-Rod.
Yeah, Alex and Randy, right. Yeah.
In, you know, less than half the plate appearances of the guys in front of him.
Yeah.
In fifth is Jay Buhner, who's kind of neck and neck with Brett Boone.
Holy mackerel, that's awesome.
And then you drop down to one of the classic Mariners, Mr. Mariner, Albert Davis.
Rick and Yunus?
No. Ray Quinones doesn't rate very well on these things, I think.
What?
I know.
You know what? This is the typical failing of statistics to measure the intangible contributions of a player.
Exactly. There was something about Ray Quinones's contempt and indifference to the team and the fans that you just can't measure in a number. You know, the guy was too cool for school, and I loved him. I loved him. He was awful. I mean, he never had a chance because he was involved in the Dave Henderson deal, but he was pathetic.
Was he?
And we have so many things on this podcast that the young fans will have no idea what we're talking about. Ray Quinones was a shortstop who was bad.
Ray Quinones, I remember, I think, three things about Ray Quinones. One, every time he came up to bat, they played the doe, a deer, a female deer, Ray. Right? Every time. I hated it. Drove me insane.
I'd forgotten that.
Right? And then two, I remember the Mariners that year put up billboards with Ray Quinones on them, and they had him up there, and the slogan was like, "I was born to play." Like, Ray Quinones is the greatest natural player on the team. And then and I may be getting this wrong, so if I remember, he left the team at one point and went back to the Dominican Republic, and the Mariners sent one of their people after him, and then they tracked him down, and they finally found him, and he was hiding from the Mariners guy by trying to stand behind a foam pole. Yeah.
All right. I didn't know that. I know that he had left the team, that they'd sent somebody down after him. I didn't know that it devolved into like the worst chase scene in history on the streets of the Dominican. That's really pathetic. I can totally imagine that, though.
I wonder if that's in Art Thiel's book.
Yeah, it could be.
By the way, Art Thiel, Out of Left Field. It's available used for very little money. It's outstanding.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Hiding well takes effort.
Well, also, you know, he was not a big guy.
Right. I don't know what kind of phone poles they have down there. So, rounding out the top 10, Mike Cameron, John Olerud, and Dan Wilson.
Dan Wilson, really?
Yeah, it's not a lot. But, you know, position scarcity and all that, you get a lot just for playing catcher. Man, and he did have a couple of good years.
I miss Mike Cameron.
What's that?
I miss Mike Cameron.
Oh, so do I. So do I. It didn't really make sense when he was on the block this year for the M's to go get him, but I kind of wanted them to go get him anyway.
What else do we have going?
It would just be kind of an amazing thing for the Mariners in a true rebuilding year, a 90 to 100 loss season, to go get guys in their late 30s. That said, it's Mike Cameron. We already know how much Jack and Tony Blangino think about the guy. They may have considered it, but this is probably not the time to get guys on their last legs. We are not going to acquire Arthur Rhodes, even though he is better than Aaron Laffey.
Yeah, I think on Twitter somebody last night asked us like where the heart is. Why don't people? Why don't any of the Mariners pitchers throw at guys? And I think that's kind of counterproductive. But I was like, yeah, where is Arthur Rhodes? Yeah, where's
Arthur Rhodes is headed to the playoffs this year, sadly.
Where are these guys? Like, Lou Piniella always used to have one guy at the back of the bullpen he was willing to just bring in and have plunk somebody. You kind of respect that.
Definitely. I liked Frankie Rodriguez, whose skill set seemed to be wrapped up into aggression and violence. But when it was deployed against, Jim Leyritz or something like that, hey, thank you, Frankie Rodriguez.
Yes, on behalf of all Marinerdom,
exactly.
I'd like to thank Frankie Rodriguez for his service to the team.
And to baseball.
Yes. All right, what else do you want to talk about, or do you want to button up?
Maybe. I guess we could just say that Willy Mopeña.
Oh, man, am I looking forward to this.
I know, I'm really looking forward to it. He's going to suit up tonight for the Tacoma Rainiers. You should probably go. I'm probably going to try and go.
You should totally go.
He's not going to be there very long because with Cust gone, Mariners now have a bunch of pitchers. They're going to need somebody who hits the ball a long, long way.
Yeah. If I had not gone to Tacoma yesterday, I would probably go down today.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I want to see if Willie can hit one out. Straight center field.
Yes, if anyone can, it's probably him. And we would have probably the first non-wind-aided clearance of the center field wall.
Yeah.
I mean, he was on fire this year for Reno, so, he can certainly hit at this level. I think he was kind of exposed in his, 50 plate appearances in Arizona. But, there's some worry that he's just not going to be able to hit a major league pitching at this point. But
he can't.
I don't really care.
No one argues.
No one can. And if he does hit the ball, it can go 500 feet, and that's what I'm going to grasp at right now.
I think Dave and I have talked about our Willie Mo experience, but when we went to the All-Star game and we were sitting there watching him take BP, he was swinging at balls in the dirt, and we were just laughing because we both knew that was coming. And then he started yanking pitches into the left field stands, and we both just shut up. And we're like, holy mackerel. And then he was just spraying home runs all over the place. And then when he missed, you know, it was our hair blew back in the stands. But
yeah,
there were moments where he would get a hold of them, and in that first instance, I would think that pitch might actually just get out of the stadium.
Yeah.
When he actually, can he hit major league pitching? Clearly he cannot, but
he's had some good years. I think you're probably right. I'm hoping against hope that he actually can, but it's looking increasingly like that he can't.
Yeah. I just feel like the good thing about a player like Willie Moe is, you know, even Shane Monahan can hit 150,
mm-hmm.
right? And Shane Monahan would swing at balls in the dirt until his arms fell off. You know, Mo Pena doesn't have to be able to hit breaking balls all that well to contribute to the team right now.
Right.
And if he can yank one out of Safeco, man, I'm a fan forever.
Absolutely.
That's colossal. Absolutely.
If anyone can, it's probably him.
I think that would be, if the Mariners are going to give me one thing this year, I want to see William Pena just whack one
exactly.
out.
Exactly. There is absolutely no downside here. He's not blocking anyone. He could platoon at DH with Mike Karp. Mike Karp could play left field for a while. Just give him some at-bats against lefties.
Yep.
That's all we're really asking. So I think they will. I mean, there's no alternative right now.
No.
But also, come down to Tacoma and watch Willie Mo Pena, Carlos Peguero, and Mike Wilson in the same
lineup.
Awesome. I just can't believe Greg Hallman is missing this.
I feel bad, though, because, you know, the Rainiers, they got the... Hey, you've been to the new Cheney.
I have.
What do you think?
I like it. I like it. All of the changes, they're not for me. You know, this is what we've seen throughout minor leagues, you know, following on in the major leagues, where they're becoming smaller size replicas of major league stadia, in which luxury boxes take on a lot of importance, especially when you don't have TV deals or anything like that.
Right.
Maximizing your revenue from the gate, from the park is pretty important. And I think they're doing that. I think attendance is up. Maybe we can have Curto on here to talk about some of that stuff.
Yeah.
The old park was just a really, really old,
stadium. Yeah, it was.
Early 60s, it wasn't a great... the amenities weren't great.
Yeah, it was a couple chairs, uncomfortable seats on concrete.
Right. Yeah. The old seats, which were actually from, you know, the WPA era stadium in San Francisco that they trucked up to Tacoma. They brought the light stands and the seats from the old stadium. So I mean, I think it's certainly better in that respect. Is it any better just to watch a game? Yeah, maybe a little bit. But I think 95% of what went on there was in building the luxury suites. And then, of course, they shortened the walls, so they put the bullpens behind the outfield walls, and that seems to have really changed the way it plays. There have been a whole lot of home runs hit there. The Rainiers are on pace to score about 900 runs in a 140-game season, which... is astonishing, given what the Mariners are going to do.
So I don't know how I feel about that then, because one of the things I really liked about Tacoma was, as a run scoring environment, it was fairly similar to Safeco.
Absolutely, yeah. It's not anymore, and I think we're going to have to figure out exactly why that is. I mean, it can't simply be the, you know, shortening the walls or taking it in. I still think there's something to do with the way air moves around there, since the stadium itself is now so much higher. It's like they built it up vertically.
Yeah, we got to talk to Curto.
We do. We have to talk to Curto.
Did you catch Curto trolling the International League on Twitter?
Yes.
Holy mackerel, that was awesome.
That was awesome.
Oh. Not that we're I support Twitter have... trolling.
Not at all.
But, yeah, well, that's really interesting.
It is. We're going to have to see how that plays out. But I'm just looking forward to seeing Willy Mo Pena in this lineup, even if it's just going to be for about a week.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, in the minor league organizations, do the Mariners send Willy Mo down and then write the Rainiers an extra $5,000 check for more balls? Just knowing that they're going to lose so many in batting practice.
I wonder if that could be written into somebody's contract. That's interesting. I don't know. Again, another question for Curto.
Because you would think at the minor league operational level, like, all right, the fans are going to love Willy Mo Pena, and I'm going to lose 25 balls a day.
Right.
At least.
Right.
And the fans are going to be happy because they walk out to their car, and there's a ball lying there, and then they're going to be unhappy when they realize that the driver's side window is smashed.
Right.
Is that still the case? Is the parking lot still in the line of fire?
Yes. Again, one section is in the line of fire. A home run would need to go over the bullpen, over the fence, behind the fence.
Yeah, I've seen that.
The road, over the little grass berm thing, and hit a car. But again, we're talking about Willy Mo Pena.
Yeah, so pro tip, when you park at New Cheney Stadium, look out for potential Willy Mo Pena batting practice balls.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. If you come early, heads up.
Yeah.
Walking around outside the stadium.
Yeah. Because I really don't want to see one of our loyal listeners drilled in the head by a 750-foot Willy Mo Pena home run.
At the same time, I want to treat our listeners to a Willy Mo Pena 750-foot home run, either in batting practice or anything. This is going to be great.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to see him in Seattle, so very soon.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Mark, for taking the time.
Thank you, Derek.
I'd like to thank our day's sponsor, Ichiro.
Thanks, Ichiro. You're just the best.